You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a monthly program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, I'm excited to be talking to author and ecologist and mushroom roamer, Daniel Winkler. Daniel has written three field guides: Edible Mushrooms of the Pacific Northwest, Edible Mushrooms of California, and with a co-writer, Larry Evans, a book about Amazon mushrooms. I'm so excited that you're here by phone today, and here's Daniel. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Oh, pretty fine. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about mushrooms.
It is. And are you in the Pacific Northwest today?
Yeah, I am at home in my yard in Kirkland.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to start by asking you about mushroom hunting here on the Olympic Peninsula and in the Puget Sound. What kind of advice would you give to a beginner? I'm definitely a beginner, even though I've been looking at them for years.
Well, looking at them is a key thing. You wanna get to know them. You wanna be able to see differences, and then you should get information if you wanna eat them, which one are easy to identify. And luckily, we have a whole range of excellent edible mushrooms that are fairly easy to identify. We never say idiot proof because there's no such things. But you know, with a little bit of attention, there's maybe a dozen mushrooms that are fairly easy to identify. And yes, there's a whole bunch of good edibles that are tricky, and there's difficult lookalikes and so on. But there's many easy mushrooms where you are quite safe. And a key thing is if you can team up with people who know already a few mushrooms, that makes it so much easier learning from people. And of course, we have mycological societies in the Puget Sound areas. I think we have six of them. You have the Olympic Peninsula Mycological Society, and down in Bremerton is Kitsap, and then in Seattle, the Puget Sound Mycological Society, Everett, Snohomish County, and the list goes on and on.
All these groups organize hikes, and they have evenings with slideshows, and you could probably bring your mushrooms in. I know that the Olympic Peninsula Society meets from October through May, and I believe they meet at the Gardner Community Center. So I'm pretty secure with shaggy manes, Daniel. But I haven't been able to find any morels here, and you know, I always find the fall chanterelle. So any other advice for me?
With the morels, you're not alone, because they're not so much of a lowland mushroom. They pop up in March, often on mulch bark. But, you know, it's they only pop up for 1 year when there's a new mulch, and they're actually not that tasty, and that's already in March, really early. And then out in nature, you know, it's mid-April, and then up in the mountains, May, June. This year, everything is early, at least in spring with the morels was quite early. So they take much more commitment to find. But chanterelles, shaggy manes, and then oysters, for example, growing on decaying alder trees, or poplars, they are fairly easy to identify because there's nothing, you know, in that size class, let's say, you know, 4-inch diameter, laterally attached, like a shelf attached, soft gilt on alders or maples, and they can fruit year-round.
Okay, so I'll start looking for those. And as far as good taste, I heard that there's truffles here. Is that true?
Oh yeah, we have excellent truffles, and they are associated with Douglas firs.
Oh.
And there is no lack of Douglas firs in the lowlands. So the season is different from most mushrooms. They kick in late December and then January through April. And it's just, if you're out there by yourself looking for them, it's not very gratifying because you got a, you don't have that X-ray vision or the nose of a dog. So it is, you know, it's not recommended that you do that without a dog. But if you have a dog, you have trained to recognize the scent of truffles.
Mm-hmm. Are these the French breed? I heard that, so I looked on your website and I saw that you have a tour or a kind of a program where you get together in Oregon with a dog. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, and we meet in late January next year. It's going to be January 25th in Portland, and then I called it the wine and dine truffling time. So we eat lots of truffles, we eat like kings, and then we go also out in the woods and look for Oregon whites. The Oregon whites are a truffle that doesn't grow as deep in the soil. It grows right on the surface between the mineral layer and the decaying, the duff layer. So you can actually, in the right place, even look for them without a dog. But you already got to know exactly where you're looking. Otherwise, it's very frustrating. And then there's also the Oregon Truffle Festival in Eugene, and we combine that. So that's part of our program. And actually, we're going to have this November, we're going to have our first Washington Truffle Festival in Woodinville the weekend before Thanksgiving. So
perfect.
I'll be there, and I'll be curious to see what the organizers are going to offer.
Uh-huh. Let's hope they kind of scope out the truffles beforehand. Do they have a dog? No. It's okay.
I'm sure they do bring the dogs, but I said, wait a minute. Mid-November, our Oregon whites and our black truffles are not fruiting yet. And they say, yeah, we're aware of that, but the European, the Perigot truffles are already available. So I think they're going to treat us with fresh European truffles and maybe some of our local truffles in the form. You can preserve the aroma in butters and in cheese and in oils. So we'll see.
Oh, that sounds really fun. It sounds like a really good idea and another thing for us foodies to get involved with. Your website is called Mushrooming. Mushrooming.com, is that how people would find it?
Mushrooming. We roam for mushrooms.
That's right. And you don't just roam here around the Seattle or the Pacific Northwest. You go all over the world. So I found this incredibly fascinating that you like have been to Tibet. What kind of mushrooms are in Tibet? And do people eat them there?
Oh, yeah. Tibetans love their mushrooms. And actually, a lot of the edible mushrooms are pretty much the same stuff we have here. So there's chanterelles, there's bolets, there's morels, there's lots of matsutake of great economic importance. Interestingly, there they grow with evergreen oak trees up to the tree line. It is very fascinating to see how not just the vegetation, the flora, but also the fungi, the mushrooms, in the Northern Hemisphere, how similar they are in Eurasia and North America. I never would have thought that mushroom knowledge that I acquired from my early years on growing up in Bavaria, in Germany, that would be of great help in the Pacific Northwest or even in Tibet, but that's the case. And, of course, I was very careful eating mushrooms because I had no idea what are the poisonous mushrooms in other places and are there lookalikes I'm not familiar with. But after doing this for many years in the Northern Hemisphere, it is surprisingly similar in regard of what are really the good edibles and what are the really dangerous mushrooms.
So the Southern Hemisphere you've been to as well, both Colombia and the Amazon. How is it different there? What goes on there in terms of mushrooming? Is it in the jungle?
We go into the Amazon, into the jungle, and we go also in mountain forests or the cloud forests And the Amazon, the mushrooms are quite different. There's still a few similarities of wood decaying mushrooms. So mushrooms that just feed straight off wood, they can be quite independent from the climate. But all these favorites I mentioned before, our choice edibles out here, they don't really grow in the Amazon. There is hardly any trees that associate with these mushrooms. There's a few exceptions, but the mushrooms are very different. But still, a lot of the mushrooms we have here have relatives, and it helps a lot knowing our mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's a much stronger connection to the mushrooms you can find on the East Coast.
When I look at the website and in the mushrooming books I've looked at, there's so much opportunity for fabulous photography. These are certainly beautiful and strange formations that you have on your website, and so great photography. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and it's so fascinating, and it's such a joy finding a beautiful mushroom. I mean, the colors, the shapes, the forms, the weirdness of some of these things. It's really, when I was mushroom hunting as a kid, I never saw these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was excited finding good edibles, and, you know, I wasn't even that much interested in eating them. It was my parents who loved it, and I enjoyed finding things
mm-hmm.
Easter Sunday over and over again. But, I mean, just the beauty there and how so many people can go through their lives and not seeing it is really sad.
It is. It's really, well, it's a very special place that we live in here. And then when you're traveling in some of these more exotic places, do you have guides? How do you get around? What are the trips
like? It's always depending where we're going. But yes, I love to work with local people. Like in Tibet, I have a friend who is our guide. And then we try to find local people who live in the place and ask them to take us in the forests. It helps finding mushrooms, but it also adds a really great personal level, connecting with local people from a whole different culture over such a subject. You know, anybody who loves mushrooms quickly makes a friend with somebody somewhere else when they see that they share
mm-hmm.
the love for mushrooms. And it's always fascinating, you know, and then sometimes seeing how in other cultures people love a mushroom where we just say, why would you eat this stuff? There it's like, oh, we love this. And they look at us when we eat things and say, that you think that's a good edible? So it's really great, you know, out in the woods, cross-cultural experiences. And
mm-hmm.
and always surprises. There's always new stuff to be found.
So, would you call these trekking expeditions that you go on?
No, I mean trekking. I would rather call them drive. Like in Tibet, it's more drive-by mushroom hunting. There's these backcountry roads. Many of them are not even paved. And whenever we see a great spot, you know, we pull over. We go in the woods. Sometimes we go on a day hike or so, but since mushrooms grow during the rainy season, I don't really like the idea of camping. The rainy season in Tibet, for example, is not really awful. It's not that wet a place, but, you know, I don't like getting mm-hmm. up in the morning and it's still raining and then have just to deal with the realities of a wet camp.
That's true.
I'd rather spend the night in a hotel room and then, you know,
have
out
a nice
in the woods
breakfast.
exactly. No, it's we don't. I mean, sometimes I wished we'd do more trekking like adventures,
mm-hmm.
but we also have our mushroom books with us, and so
mm-hmm.
you know, I just never really chosen that format for.
No, I just didn't know how far
advantages.
You had to go. Okay, and in the Amazon area, is it the same thing? Do you go by road, or are you sometimes in a boat?
Usually by boat. There is no roads when the Amazon is really still pristine. There is no roads, and You go in canoes, as they call them, in small boats. You go up the river, and, you know, you get to these places. I mean, just fascinating. When there's 2 or 3 hours, you go up a river, and there's not a single piece of garbage floating on the river or in the banks. I mean, you just know you're in pristine nature, and the monkeys, the howlers in the trees, and the macaws flying across. I mean, it's just such an experience. And you know, when we go to these places, it's not just about the mushrooms. Yes, we most people who travel with me love mushrooms, but most people who love mushrooms already have been long in love with many other things in nature, and so the wildlife and the plants and all these things and cultures of most people's interests. And what I discovered, I never had thought of it, but it's a really great filter to travel with people, because anybody who collects mushrooms knows that, you know, treasures can grow in the dirt. So when traveling, you know, we deal with a fair amount of challenges, be it, you know, heat, cold, mud, dirt, different hygienic conditions. But, you know, I have the feeling mushroom people can deal with that pretty well, because they know, you know, the treasures waiting in the dirt, and you got to accept the dirt to find the jewels. And so they make good travelers.
We have some fairly well-known plant hunters that live here in Port Townsend. They have a nursery called Far Reaches. And when they do their talks, they're always talking about the leeches that get in their boots.
Kelly and Sue are good friends of mine.
That's right.
They're great people. And yes, the leech element is, I try to stay away from that, because leeches are just very abundant in the mushroom season. And luckily, they are not everywhere on the globe. But in South Asia, in India, or then further east, you know, going to Malaysia, down to Tasmania, you can run in a lot of leeches. And it takes out a little bit of the fun, and, you know, especially I like to take pictures of mushrooms, and so there I'm.
You want to get down in there, right?
On the ground, and the leeches come, and it just, I mean, the fear of the leech is often worse than the leech itself.
But that's true.
I have to admit, I'm staying away from leech. At least I wouldn't take a group of people into a leech forest. It's just, you know.
Well, that's good to know. There you go. A reason to go mushrooming rather than going to Southeast Asia.
I have to admit, I mean, in the Amazon, there's plenty of challenges in regard of the heat and the humidity. But the mosquitoes in Leavenworth seem even, they're worse than in the Amazon. And so that keeps me out of the Leavenworth areas often, because when I just get out of the car and there's 50 mosquitoes on me, I don't enjoy that.
No.
That's not, no.
No. And you know, so it is, you know, in the fall, it's cooler and, you know, it's something to do in the fall instead of looking for the flowers and the wildflowers in the mountains. But you're right. It's a good filter for people that want to travel but also want to be involved in nature. And so I thought this was a really exciting, and I think your trips are really exciting for people to look at. And that's mushrooming, all one word, .com, and the photographs on this website are really beautiful. We are talking today to Daniel Winkler, and he is an author and a writer and a person that's very knowledgeable about mushrooms. He's going to be coming to Port Townsend in September, and so we're getting your interest up before that talk that's going to be at the Port Townsend Library. And I wanted to ask Daniel about something that I didn't know anything about until I went to a recent talk and then looked at his website, and that's, what exactly are cordyceps? Can you tell us about those, Daniel?
Oh, cordyceps, yeah. It's a parasitic fungus, so it's a mushroom that attacks insects. And it will take over the organism of the insect, go straight into the nervous system, and control the movement of the larvae or all kinds of insects, flies, pupae of butterflies, and controls the movement of the insect and makes the insect whether climb to the end of a branch or bite into a leaf, under a leaf so it's protected from the rain, mm-hmm. and then the mushroom kills off the insect and mm-hmm. will grow its fruiting body, and the fruiting body then will produce the spores, the seeds of the mushroom that will try to find the next insect to attach themselves to.
So do the spores land on the insect and then start from there? Is that how they begin? Yes?
Yeah, the spores will land on the insect and then the spore will grow a little fine thread and that will find a spot where it can penetrate the insect, and the spore releases chitinase, that's an enzyme that softens the chitin of the insect. So it's all a very tricky process.
It sounds like it. And they're very bizarre and strange looking. I felt like when I was looking at the pictures, like I was looking at underwater life, things that I've never seen before. And
the underwater life comparison is a good one. And actually already the Greek name fungus, Latin, comes from spongos, Greek, which has a connection to sponge. And, mm-hmm. you know, the water coral sponge. So there's a lot of, similarities in regard of strange growing shapes. But there's, of course, there's underwater fungi, but they do not grow these fruiting bodies.
Other than their strange beauty, do cordyceps have any benefit for humans?
Well, for the Tibetans, they make them rich. And the Chinese are completely convinced that taking cordyceps, you can ward off all kinds of disease, and they regard it as a tonic, and it's also they think it helps fighting cancer, and we don't have any medical trials that would confirm that, but it has been shown that one of the most famous active ingredients in cordyceps, cordycepine, that is actually stopping cancer cell reproduction.
Okay. So there's a lot
we have
know.
Some evidence, but we don't have no rigorous Western clinical studies, and but the Chinese or many other East Asians and a few people out west here, they don't need these kind of studies
to
trust in the power of these things, and that's reflected in the price, which is really astronomical. I mean, a pound of the Tibetan cordyceps goes from anywhere from $4,000 to $40,000.
Oh, my goodness. Well, a pound is a lot.
You don't eat it like a regular mushroom.
No.
So
do you pound it up and put it in a pill?
Right, that's one way, or you can just eat it. It has a nutty, sweet nutty taste. Once you get over the idea, you eat in a larva.
Yes.
Because it still looks like a larva, but it's all
fungus on
the inside.
Can't you just kind of crush it up and pulverize it? And then put it in a cookie?
You can do that, or people put it in a tea.
In the tea, yes.
In a tea, yeah, I like that, because then it gets also a little bit of sterilization since it's stuck out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit of boiling water will, sterilize the outside. And very fascinating. And then in the rainforest in Tibet, we have one kind that is collected tens of millions each year by all the Tibetans. But in the Amazon, we have much more diversity, but we have not really a history of medical use. I'm sure there's also, it's just such a specialized organism that got to overpower the immune system of the insects. And, I'm sure there's some good benefits in that too. But since there's no traditional use to develop a new drug out of out of something without a track record. Nobody's doing that. The pharmaceuticals have no interest in working with natural substances as a whole. They want one active ingredient, and healing with natural substances is not where the money is.
Right. Well, before you go, I want to talk about some books that you would recommend to our listeners. And we were talking earlier, and you mentioned one by Eugenia Bone. What was that?
Yeah, Eugenia Bone, Mycophilia, which is a great book giving an overview over all kinds of different fields in mycology, written in a very informative, entertaining way, well written. She is a newcomer to the mushroom world, just worked through lots of material, talked to lots of people, and actually came on one of my trips too. That's how I got to know her. And fascinating stories about mushrooms and the mushroom festivals in North America, and for example, Brighton Bush in Oregon at the Hot Springs every October.
Mm-hmm.
So a very informative book.
Okay, and then I'd like to recommend The Mushroom Hunters by Langdon Cook. He's been here in Port Townsend. And that talks a lot about the economics of mushroom hunting, but also just what it's like to be a forager. And have you read his book as well?
Oh, yeah, of course. And I've heard Langdon present on the subject many times, and I also traveled with him, and he was interested to see how the economic mushroom hunting is happening in Tibet, because there's matsutake picking here in the Pacific Northwest, and in Tibet everybody collects for the Japanese, but it didn't make it as a chapter in his book.
Oh.
But it's very interesting, you know, because it was a field where nobody else paid attention, and it's a pretty colorful scene. And as a pot hunter, meaning, you know, going out there collecting mushrooms to feed ourselves, we are, of course, extremely fascinated by the amounts you have to pick to make it commercially viable.
They have to be fresh.
Commercial pickers.
They
got to be fresh,
yeah.
Top conditions,
right.
and it got to be. It got to be a lot. Otherwise, it doesn't pay the bills. And I had some friends who tried living in Seattle and making it, collecting wild mushrooms. But just the back and forth going into the mountains, into the areas, you know, you got to really stay in these areas. Otherwise, the gas companies that make the money.
And you also, mentioned some free software. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Matchmaker. Great software. Ian Gibson from Victoria, now a retired physician, put together that software with the help of a couple other people, Bryce Kendrick and now Danny Miller here from Seattle area. And it's just incredible software with over several thousand pictures and sorted by the different categories of mushrooms, let's say puffballs, cup fungi, gilt mushrooms, or the corals, and then you can put in red color, certain size, all kinds of traits, odors, smells like garlic,
okay.
And then you're just looking at 15 names. Important is when you use Matchmaker is that you let your partner know that it is about mushrooms, not about people. Because usually when you're already looking for matches while you're in a relationship, that's the end of the relationship.
Right. So maybe when people do a search for it, they should put matchmaker and mushrooms into their search.
Absolutely. They could put matchmaker, fungi, and it's the South Victoria Island Mycological Society.
All right.
They offer it just across the water for you guys.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you today, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us on Book Lovers Cafe.
Well, thank you.
This is a program for everyone who hasn't read everything. And today we talked to Daniel Winkler, who is the author of Three Field Guides, The Edible Mushrooms of the Pacific Northwest, The Edible Mushrooms of California, and Amazon Mushrooms with Larry Evans. He will be visiting Port Townsend, and it'll be fun to go and listen to what he has to say there. Please join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and I'd like to thank Larry Stein, Mike Schlexer, Nora Petrich, and I'd like to thank Pat Rogers, who is working on putting our podcasts up on our website, kptz.org.